Liberals would rather protect kids from God in school than from ISIS propaganda on the internet. Let me rephrase that. They don't want the Judeo-Christian God in school. Allah would be okay if some Muslim kid wants to pray. Can you imagine the public relations disaster you'd have if some Sunni kid was denied the right to pray when the Quran requires? But just try to mention God in the Pledge of Allegiance, you'll have so-called humanists screaming. Did you know that the courts decided that kids are no longer required to stand during the pledge, or even say it at all? Any mention of the Judeo-Christian God is rooted out by the psychotics with law degrees in the terrorist organization called the ACLU, which attacks our fundamental liberties and our fundamental belief in God and says virtually nothing about the war on terror. Those misguided lunatics are actually on the other side. They're also brainwashing the young. You see millennials on the streets of every major city with their wide, uneducated eyes and clipboards clutched in painted fingernails. The boys have them too, asking passersby, "Do you have a moment to talk about human rights?" These are a few of the little drones we should pick up, re-educate, and put into our new cyber army. We can also conscript some existing hackers. Some, but not all. Too many of them have a criminal mindset. I'm not saying they're criminals, but they definitely think like criminals. There are two different types. Basically, hard hackers and soft hackers. A soft hacker will go in and look at people's stuff, but won't change anything. A hard hacker goes in, changes stuff, and brings websites down, and does cyber damage to the equipment, or the place, or the company, or government, or whatever. Wait, you say, aren't most hackers left-wing fanatics? No. Most hackers are just rebels. They just want to do hacking. In other words, a lot of them are renegades and somewhat criminal in their mentality. But if you drafted them, wouldn't they be unmanageable? Wouldn't they get into ISIS bank accounts and steal the funds for themselves? They'd like to, sure. A few courts martial and prison sentences would stop that, though maybe that could actually be an inducement, a share of the spoils instead of a bronze star. You have to know how to talk to them, not as a computer-savvy person, but as a rebel. Listen, I'm a rebellious person, as old as I am. I've been a rebel all my life. I rebel against any authority. Ask people who know me. Anyone tells me what to do, I bristle and go the other way. You cannot appeal to a rebel to do the right thing. That's not going to happen. You have to position it as a challenge, not a command. It has to be something like, "I dare you to break into ISIS's internet, China's internet, or Russia's internet." They'll see it as a way to strut their stuff, to preen, which is another way to get them to give this project their all. It's called motivation. They're always trying to find out who's the best. They're always trying to find out who can get whom. If you take a group of really good hackers and put them into the same room and say, "This is our challenge today," they're going to go against one another to try to see who can finish it first. You ever watch video gamers play in the old arcades? They had one eye on the screen, one eye on what the ace next to them was doing. That forced them to up their game. Those guys and gals might not care about our nation's security, they'd just like to solve the puzzle. They say the only reason they won't try to do certain stuff is that they are afraid of the criminal charges that would come against them. They don't trust the government, nor do I. It's an untrustworthy enterprise to begin with. We have the sneakiest president in the history of this country, one who is beneath contempt. We have to draft cyber soldiers, and then we have to tell them, We are going to pay you this much money and will write you a paper saying you're free of all charges against you for hacking in these areas. This means immediately getting rid of the bureaucracy and legal issues. You want to write executive orders, Mr. President? Write that one. Write an order that frees the NSA, the National Security Agency, which has been forced to fight this urgent war with one hand tied behind its back. We, no, you, have done this to it because we have been bullied by a handful of liberals to be so concerned about civil liberties that we're in danger of losing both our civility and our liberties. It's time to get off the seesaw. Let's get fully involved in this fight for survival. I've said it before, and I'll keep saying it. We have to get rid of the rules of engagement like those Obama has imposed upon our fighting men. For example, fighter pilots are coming back from sorties and saying they couldn't even drop their bomb loads because one of the girls in the sorority told them not to drop the bombs on a target in Iraq because we might do some collateral damage. The same thing is going on here. We are crippled by the communist mentality, the top-heavy bureaucracy that was established long before Obama, but that has metastasized into a Frankenstein. I have another suggestion on how to wrangle the hackers we so desperately need. I mentioned educating the drones. Show them some of the beheading and murder videos that ISIS has posted. Show them the Syrian pilot being set on fire in a cage. Show them a small group of Arab men in a cage slowly being lowered into water and drowned. Tell them that if they don't stop the subhumans who did that, they'll be suffering the same fate at the hand of a soulless enemy. After that, they'll be glad to break into ISIS networks. Patriotism may be a foreign concept to a lot of those people, but fear is universal. Scare them, and they will help. It's the same way we got rocket scientists to come onto our side after the fall of Nazi Germany. Those guys had a choice. Come to America and work for us, or go to the USSR and live in a forced labor camp. The ones who weren't captured and forced to work for Stalin chose to come here. Without the know-how they developed creating V-2 rockets, it would have taken years longer to get into space. Ironically, without the space program, we wouldn't have the satellites, microchips, and miniaturized cameras that make the internet and cell phones possible. At least they would have taken much longer to develop. I think this plan would work because I understand hackers. I get along with them because we think the same way. Fundamentally, when you think about talk radio, if it's truly rebellious, it's actually hacking into the mentality of the country. I'm telling you, if we're good at talk radio, we're going up against the status quo and hacking the mainstream BS. In talk radio, we say, no, that's not what it is. We're going to take down that big lie and we're going to tell you what we think the truth is. I suspect that a large number of individuals in the hacking community listen to the show because they think the same way. Even so, this is too critical to leave to chance, which is why we can't just seek out brilliant people and ask them to do it. Some might come because, like the rocket scientists, they'd rather work for Uncle Sam than Uncle Abdul. The rest, I would require them to do it. Many of the people we need are already working for the buccaneers of the internet fortunes. Notice I didn't call them entrepreneurs, but buccaneers, corsairs. Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, Bill Gates of Microsoft, Larry Ellison of Oracle. They're brilliant people, very successful. Those pirates have more money than they could ever spend during the next 10,000 years, yet they still want cheap labor. They push candidates who are for open borders so they can bring in tech workers from India who will work for half the money an American worker will work for. This is how sickening their mindset is, so they too would have to be forced to cooperate. You see, those people who prospered in this land of opportunity are the reason we're losing technological superiority, why we need a cyber army, why we have to recruit and train our young. It's because the buccaneers of the superhighway pay politicians off. What do you think Obama does when he goes to Silicon Valley and gets $30,000 a head for a speech? Why do you think they organize these speeches for him? It's to keep him from demanding anything of them. It's cheap. They throw together a dinner somewhere at a hotel. They have an entertainer. Some guy comes along and does a song for them, and then they get to keep cashing in. That's why Facebook and Twitter and Instagram aren't forced by the federal government to stop permitting the terrorists from using their highways. Obama may force mom-and-pop operations to support maternity leave, sick leave, a higher minimum wage, transgender bathrooms, and other crippling burdens, but when it comes to Silicon Valley, nothing. He goes there, he gives speeches, and Zuckerberg gets to do nothing for America except line his pockets with more profits. The same for Bill Gates, despite all of his PR agents saying what a nice guy he is. He is not using Microsoft to stop terrorists. What would it take for Zuckerberg to shut down Al-Qaeda access to one of his highways? How would he do that? I talked to a computer security expert. He said the issue is that it would be a little bit difficult. First off, ISIS would be able to use a VPN, a virtual private network. So you screen for those accounts. You have the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, CIA, or whoever, whatever outfit you'd like, keep a liaison with you at corporate headquarters. They look through all posts in a given language. Farsi, Pashtun, Arabic. They look through posts in that given language, they run the algorithms the NSA already has, and they immediately delete and shut down accounts. It would be literally immediately if you put the right amount of work into it, and it wouldn't be particularly expensive. So why isn't Barry Obama's government doing this? It isn't just because of fundraising. That's when my security guy blew my mind. He said, ISIS is useful. ISIS creates instability. ISIS keeps the Gulf states on their toes. They keep Syria on their toes because we want to build a pipeline to keep Syria under pressure. Incredible. He was basically saying that the government is letting ISIS exist. It makes sense. We could shut it down. We bullied Facebook, Twitter, Verizon. We bullied any number of tech companies when we needed them to cooperate with then-legal NSA dragnet spy programs. Clearly, this is guilt by omission, at least in my opinion. We have the power to take command and do something about this, but we haven't. The same President Obama who tells our Air Force not to bomb a convoy of oil trucks because the fires will pollute the environment, who tells them not to blow up pickup trucks during a victory parade, who tells Air Force pilots to come back with full bomb loads on bombing missions, is telling people in cybersecurity to look the other way and let ISIS plot its next attack. People in government tell me that they would love to get up and scream that they know what's going on. They could stop the next attack, but they're being prohibited from doing so by higher-ups. In its current iteration, the war on terror is an absolute fraud. We watch Christians being crucified by ISIS while millennials are encouraged to post selfies on Instagram. What's the end game of Obama and his acolytes? What do they want? The enemy within? What are they doing? If Obama is really trying to sow the seeds of a Hillary Clinton presidency, what does he think the resulting garden will look like? For the answer, look at the European Union. Look at its leaders. They long ago stopped caring about the will or the well-being of their people. It was only when the people of the United Kingdom took over and voted in a referendum that they started to notice. And the Prime Minister, David Cameron, didn't think the vote would succeed, which was the only reason he agreed to hold it. Now he's gone, and Theresa May is in. First things first. We have to understand that our government has betrayed us and has been betraying us consistently for over a decade. Our government does not represent our interests. It represents certain other interests. For the government, instability in the Middle East is a good thing. It keeps the Saudis buying weapons. It keeps them distracted from the Israelis. It keeps the Sunnis and the Shiites at each other's throats. ISIS is still handled with kid gloves by the Gulf states because they're concerned about an ultimate showdown with Iran, the growing Shiite power. They're concerned about that, but they see ISIS as a potential tool in the struggle. Iran has been very successful. Donald Trump himself said, if Iran was a stock, I'd buy it yesterday. And he's right. It has been extremely successful with all of its efforts in the Middle East. If we had a legitimate government, officials wouldn't be allowed to take money from the Zuckerbergs who have capitalized on the superhighways. They wouldn't be allowed to take money for their election campaigns. If they didn't take money, they could force the Buccaneers to do the right thing. We wouldn't have to watch ISIS and Al-Qaeda rule the cyberwaves like Britannia once ruled the sea. They would suggest their own operations to take down ISIS websites, Al-Qaeda websites. The movie studios did that during World War II. The Xanax and Warners and their kind were patriots. They were happy, willing, eager to make propaganda films to take down the Nazis, the Italian fascists, the Japanese. I remind you of men such as David Sarnoff, whose name has probably been forgotten by now. Sarnoff owned NBC. He was either the general manager or the owner. He enlisted in the military as a colonel for $1 a year to lend his brilliance in organization and planning as a businessman to the war effort to defeat Germany and Japan. He was one of many great men in American industry who actually enlisted in the military at $1 a year in order to defeat Hitler. Now tell me why Bill Gates hasn't enlisted in the military to defeat ISIS. Tell me why Zuckerberg hasn't enlisted any of his company to defeat ISIS. I'll tell you where I'd start. I'd force Zuckerberg to give up a certain percentage of his workforce for the military effort. And I'd make him pay for it. Good wages, top wages. What would be wrong with that idea? Didn't ordinary Americans scrimp and budget in order to buy war bonds during World War II? What would be wrong with Zuckerberg having to pay back this nation instead of catering to China? Are you going to tell me Facebook can't afford it? Are you going to say the shareholders would complain? Show them ISIS videos at their annual meeting. Until the enemy is destroyed, they'll shut up, I promise you. The same goes for Larry Ellison, and the same goes for Bill Gates and the Google potentates. It's time for them to give back to this country. Now, a lot of the people who work at Facebook, Google, Oracle, and Microsoft aren't hackers. They are programmers. Hackers and programmers are two different animals. We need both. We need hackers to break into the ISIS and Al-Qaeda websites or communication networks, and we need computer programmers to put out positive propaganda for young people in this country. We need those programmers to program positive information for the youth of America, to make them love their country again and want to help it. We'd have them take down the hyphenates, the African Americans, the Muslim Americans, the gay Americans, and make us all what we were, Americans who put flag above diversity. If we'd do that, we'd be involved in a cyber war we might win. Until that happens, we're not going to win this war. We're going to continue losing it, and not slowly, but with increasing rapidity. Wait until virtual reality becomes commercialized over the next few years, when ISIS can recruit vulnerable kids with macho training, images of abuse of women, rape and murder. Kids raised on video games will make a natural segue into something that current labeling and limitations prohibit. Imagine playing a game and then being told you can do that for real, not in Iraq, not in Syria, but in your own community. It's coming if we don't act now. If we no longer have patriots at the level of a Sarnoff, we will have to force patriotism upon our population. If we can't get hackers who are patriots, we need citizens who aren't hackers to become hackers. They have to be tempted with access to technology they can only dream of. But they also have to be ethical, or at least ethical enough. I believe that when they start to see results, they may actually develop compassion, pride of country, but they also have to understand that the apparatus they will use to do their hacking requires access to systems at the top secret and sensitive compartmented information levels. What we would have to do is get all those thousands of people we're talking about to be trustworthy enough to handle TS/SCI data. Not all of them can be put into basements or caves like Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado Springs, where NORAD is located. If we're going to do a selective service, we need to be very selective of who we select. They have to be patriots first because of the systems that they have to be given access to. You're basically introducing a bunch of potential Edward Snowdens. Snowden was very intelligent, but he was a grave detriment to our nation. So the first ones we recruit have to be cyber-savvy people who are also patriots. The tide in this country is turning to conservatism, patriotism, and national security. Those inspiring young minds should be put in the forefront of the cyber war against ISIS. But we can't just give up on getting the hackers. How do we stop a Snowden from undermining the war effort if he were recruited? There's a very simple answer to that, and that's very severe punishment. The death penalty if you wind up doing something against the war effort. Or, let's say, 25 years in Fort Leavenworth. Nobody wants to go to Fort Leavenworth for 25 years. We tell our recruits, you're free to hack. No punishment for that, but betray this nation, and your life is over. That's how we deal with cyber ISIS, with cyber security, and with cyber threats to our nation in general. Because whether they come from China, whether they come from ISIS, ISIL, whether they come from insiders, these are probably the biggest, most dangerous threats to our nation since the creation of the atom bomb. The reason I say that is that cybersecurity isn't geographically located. With atomic bombs, you drop something on Nagasaki or Hiroshima, and it's located to that area. A hacker can operate from anywhere and strike anywhere. There's also a mindset that needs to be overcome, the same one that has plagued and hampered our conventional warfare hand. Because of the nature of the cyber world, as entities such as the National Security Agency, the Cyber Security Summit, or the U.S. Cyber Command cast their nets out to do their work, it's inevitable that collateral damage will impact the innocent. The day is going to come once ISIS bombs a few child care centers, a few disability centers, once they blow up a few more people around the country, that we're going to have to take the gloves off about stopping recruitment and radicalization on these shores. Meaning that if we take down the computers that control the terrorists' finances, their oil, their social media, other institutions may be hurt. For example, the banks that hold their billions. Even during World War II, far too many Allied banks were involved in the business of handling Nazi funds, making them grow. Americans were prolonging a war that killed Americans. We have learned nothing from history, and we are doing that again. We are way past the point of optional, my friends. We're at war. Did you hear me? The terrorists know it, but we don't know it. They've been at war with us for a very long time. I will tell you right now, they are winning the cyber war. They are certainly winning the propaganda war, which revolves around the cyber domain and also around programmers. Do you know the astonishing history of the Arabs? How in 25 years after the death of Muhammad, they conquered so much territory through warfare, hatred, murder, racism, genocide. After only 25 years, Muslim power grew astonishingly using the same methodology that they're using now. Only now, they have more power at their fingertips. Now, they have explosives and the internet. Think about what they did in 25 years using just sword and flame, rape and murder. Now, there are the same psychotic mindset, the same genocidal maniacs generations later, and now they have TNT and the internet to help them. Think about what I'm saying, and you'll understand the danger we are in. You'll understand that we are in a war for our survival. You'll understand that we have a man in the leadership position called Barry Obama, who most Americans who have a rational brain know is intentionally not doing a sufficient job to defeat ISIS, which is why he was forced to give a speech about how fabulous his war is. We all know it's a lie. We all know he's a tin soldier, and we don't have to ask why. We don't have to ask how. I've addressed that elsewhere in this book. The only question is, when is this going to change? When are we going to get serious at fighting back? When are we going to stop ISIS from using cyber warfare to defeat us and to convert this nation to a nation of slaves who follow their psychotic Sharia law? Back to our new expanded cyber army. Not only do we have to conscript, we have to have an absolute draft without exemptions. No 4Fs, no conscientious objectors. They serve or they go to prison. The minute you allow exemptions, there are going to be deferments for people who work for cyber companies. I can guarantee you there will be a cyber deferment that will be put into place because Zuckerberg and Gates will lobby the President of the United States of America and some key senators on some stupid committee and say, we need a deferment for our workers because we are already working in a very important area, important for the American economy. We need them to be exempt from the draft. You know that's what they would do. There's no end to greed. The first thing you have to understand is that there's larceny in the hearts of most men. That's an old statement. As rich as those men are, there's not enough money on the planet for them. They'll do whatever they have to do to make more. Their machine will do anything it has to do to make certain that their profits go up, not down. It's that simple. You might ask, can't you just put out an ad? That's naive. I spoke to the head of a tech company in Tennessee. The company had put out an ad looking for people. It needed coders. It pays relatively well, offers benefits. It's a proper job. It's got good pay for the region, higher than the median pay in the region. Yet it had no takers from the United States. Then the company put out this job, and it also listed it as a freelance job. It got well over 100 replies from India, decoding companies, individuals looking to freelance from Mexico, the Philippines, India, Malaysia, people from all over looking to program for it. But it got no responses from the United States. The people who actually make the magic happen, the coders, the programmers, they're superb people. They have their noses to the grindstone. They're among the best workers in the world. The problem is that we don't turn out enough of them, and the jobs get taken by overseas workers. If we were to institute some kind of cyber defense draft, it would give people a lot of experience. When they came out of the military, they would be better employees. They'd be the best. Let's be even more ambitious. Let's create an ROTC, an officer's training center on campus, but at the junior high school or even elementary school level. In fact, we should create federal cyber schools, 5 or 6 of them across the United States, that would be run by people from Microsoft, Facebook, and Twitter. They'd be drafted to run the schools in this time of war, and they'd set them up. Maybe the billionaires who own them would continue to pay them their same salary, since they've gotten so much from America for so little. Maybe they would continue to pay these guys great salaries. They could run those schools, and then we could attract young kids who might have the capacity for it. How long would it take a bright young American high school student who's computer savvy to be useful? Less than a year. They don't need a university education, per se. They don't have to learn how to put a condom on a cucumber at Harvard. You could take a bright, computer-savvy high school student, send him or her to a crash program, and within 1 year, he or she would be useful to American companies. Would that 1 year be about the same amount of time necessary for them to go to work for the government? To start taking down ISIS websites? No. For cyber warfare, they'd have to cut their teeth a little bit first, but it wouldn't be much more difficult. ISIS websites are mostly publicly hosted. ISIS is using social media, whose companies are based in the United States. They're using Facebook. They're using Twitter. They're using Instagram. We should be looking at Israel for the answer. I'm a supporter of Israel for obvious reasons. It is not just the only democracy in the Middle East. It does not just have the only prosperous society in the region, but it represents heroic stability in a sea of terrorists and poverty inflicted by greedy royal families. The Israelis are brilliant, but more than that, they are what I wish Americans could be when dealing with their enemies. Ruthless and subversive. They give no quarter, and they ask none. They are brutally effective at pursuing the interests of their people. That's what gets so many leftists riled up about Israel. They say, how terrible, because Israelis don't play the internationalist game. They just don't. Of course, Israel's a sovereign nation with a national identity. And of course, that's anathema to the New World Order. Why is Israel not engaged in fighting ISIS, is what I keep asking. The answer is, why would you fight someone that's got literally all of your enemies all tied up into knots and not paying attention to you? So we can't count on Israel for this, but we can learn from the fact that it has mandatory military service. We don't need that. We still have a sufficient number of patriots who want to serve, who want to become soldiers, who want to become SEALs. But we absolutely need mandatory cyber warfare service because we are losing that war. like the war on the ground, that is something we cannot afford to do. Bring back HUAC. Call it LAC, Love America Committee. If Donald Trump becomes president, I wonder whether we'll see a revival of groups such as the House Un-American Activities Committee. I hope so. I can name several people who should go before HUAC today. Some will say, well, come on now, that's fascistic. Really? You mean what the present administration and its anarchistic supporters is doing is not fascistic? You mean the controlling of our speech through boycotts and through false righteous indignation and control of the media is not fascistic? This country needs a thorough house cleaning, and the new House of Representatives, once it's formed, should immediately consider House Un-American Activities Committee hearings. We have people who stay in the government no matter who is in power. Republican president, Democrat president. These people are permanently fixed in places such as the State Department, and they do not fight for America. I'd like to know exactly what they're fighting for, other than themselves. The number one person on the list of witnesses to call would be Barack Obama. His anti-Americanism has been exhibited by almost all of his activities since he became president. Number two on the list would be John Kerry, who lied about the Iran deal to sell it. He lied that U.S. officials were dealing with moderates in Iran, when he knew all along that the Iranians have no moderates. The skilled storyteller duped America into passing the Iran deal. Then there's Ben Rhodes, President Obama's foreign policy lying sack of guru. Rhodes bragged about how he had helped create the false narrative that said U.S. officials were dealing with moderates in the Islamic theocracy, because the public would not have accepted the deal had it known that Iranian hardliners were still calling the shots. Well, let me tell you something, Benny boy. I'm part of the public, and I knew you were a liar, just like your boss, who has been a liar since the first day he could move his tongue. The White House line, which Rhodes says he created, was that Obama started negotiations after the supposedly moderate Iranian president Hassan Rouhani was elected in 2013. Obama had set his sights on working out a deal with the mad mullahs as early as 2008. You mean he came into office to do the deal? Now you got the rest of the story. He was hand-picked to do the deal. Where did this unknown ghost come from? This man, this administration, was hand-picked by foreign powers that manipulated him into the presidency. Because of the liars in the media, he has been able to get away with virtual murder, the murder of the truth, the murder of our national security. I know many lives were, let us say, seriously challenged during the HUAC hearings of the McCarthy era, but I want to ask you something. Have you read the Venona papers? The Soviet-era secret correspondence that came out a little over two decades ago, which confirmed that almost everything that Joseph McCarthy had been saying about the news media and Hollywood was true. That there were communists who were openly subverting America. Can anyone tell me the name of someone whose life was actually ruined by HUAC who was not really working to subvert America, who was not really a communist or fellow traveler? I'd like to know whose life was ruined. I think it's a myth that lives of innocent people were ruined. I know there were movies made. I remember The Front with Zero Mostel, in which he played an innocent actor who jumped out of a window because the House Un-American Activities Committee was after him. Hollywood has made many, many movies about the blacklist. We hear about the blacklist, but how many innocent people's lives were actually ruined? The operative word here is innocent. I'd like to know their names. The House Un-American Activities Committee was an investigative committee formed by the U.S. House of Representatives. It was originally created, most people don't know this, in 1938 to uncover citizens with Nazi ties inside the United States, as well as possible Communist Party infiltrators. Now, if I were to revitalize and to suggest that we have a new HUAC, I would investigate people with Islamist ties inside the United States. Who would object to that? I believe there are many traitors among us, such as the nuclear secret thieves Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, people who would gladly see a dirty bomb go off in this country, and I stand by those words. We do not have the time. The time bomb is ticking. The Islamists are everywhere in this country, from the highest offices in the land all the way down to the local street level. How do I know that? Because the FBI told us that 6 months ago. They have more than 1,000 active investigations, and they can't arrest those people. They have to let them kill somebody before they can even look at them. Take a look at what happened in San Bernardino, California, and Orlando. The terrorists were on a watch list, and the FBI could not stop them because we're all so intimidated by the human rights lawyers who are going to kill us all. I think it's long overdue that we have an investigation before the dirty bomb goes off, not after it. I know that it's an insensitive suggestion. I know it will rankle all of the sniffing liberal politicians in the corridors of power. How dare that loudmouth talk show host suggest such a barbaric thing as a new HUAC? Well, they are the very people who have brought us to this point of almost no return. I'll remind you of something. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were American citizens who were tried for, convicted of, and executed for conspiracy to commit espionage. Were they innocent? No. They were instrumental in passing information about the atomic bomb to the Soviet Union of Joseph Stalin, which speeded the development of Soviet nuclear weapons. They were disastrous, long-time communists and spies. Those American citizens, by the way, were tried as a result of investigations, and they were convicted of conspiracy to commit espionage in 1951 and put to death in the electric chair in 1953. There were many people who said they were not innocent. Many stories came out afterward by relatives and others proving beyond a reasonable doubt that they were spies. And they were surrounded by spies. Take Ethel's brother, David Greenglass, who supplied documents to Julius from Los Alamos and who spent 10 years behind bars. He was absolutely guilty. There was Harry Gold, Greenglass's courier, who served 15 years in federal prison. Guilty. There was also a German scientist named Klaus Fuchs, who turned over secret atomic bomb information to the Soviet Union and who served 9 years and 4 months in prison. Guilty. Now, this is the most important part of this little diversion. In 1995, the U.S. government released a series of decoded Soviet cables codenamed Venona. I had it on my radio show, the Venona Papers, back in 1995. These papers confirmed that Julius Rosenberg had acted as a courier and recruiter for the Soviets. Ethel Rosenberg's brother, David Greenglass, whose testimony had condemned her, later stated that he had lied about his sister to protect his own wife, Ruth, who had been the typist of the classified documents he stole, and that he had been encouraged to do so by the prosecution itself. Morton Sobel, who was tried with the Rosenbergs, served 17 years and 9 months of a 30-year sentence. In 2008, Sobel admitted he had been a spy and stated that Julius Rosenberg had spied for the Soviets and that Ethel Rosenberg had known what he was doing. There's a lot more to this story. Just remember that Julius and Ethel Rosenberg type infiltrators are still alive and well, working like thieves in the night to undermine the pillars of our nation. We must root them out. Back to what I asked a moment ago, a very, very straightforward question. Which of the actors, writers, and directors who were blacklisted were not, in fact, members of the Communist Party USA at the time, or, let us say, secretly associated with Communist parties at that time? Let's hear about the current blacklist. As I said, HUAC was actually formed in 1938 to uncover those in America with Nazi ties, Nazi associations, as well as communists. There was no outcry in America then. Why was there such an outcry in Hollywood and the media when it increased its focus on communists? Well, the answer is that the communists had infiltrated Hollywood and the media deeply, according to the Venona Papers. This is why I suggest that we need to create a new HUAC in an attempt to ferret out those with Islamist ties in this country. What would be an Islamist tie? What does that mean? What would a congressional committee be seeking to discover in people they call before the new House Un-American Activities Committee? You'd have to change the name for the liberals or the media would go insane. You'd have to call it something different, such as the Love America Committee. You know, use their tactics. The Love America Committee, the new LAC, would be seeking to find the Islamists and their sister travelers in the national security agencies, the Secret Service, the FBI, you name it. People will say, look at history. Look at the Great Depression. Capitalism wasn't doing too well. Capitalism wasn't meeting the needs of the people, so they were looking for something new. I would remind them that there's a saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Anyway, this is not about economics. This is about saving lives, investigating organizations and people who may have deep ties to Islamist front groups, finding out who is fronting for those who want to introduce Sharia law into America, under which homosexuals would be killed and women put into burqas. That is an un-American idea? Of course not. Have you ever looked at the Council on American-Islamic Relations or any of the other Islamist front groups in this country? If you actually read the literature, you will find out that there are quite a few groups that have openly espoused taking us back 500 years. This is not about suppressing ideas either. This is about finding people who want to kill us and putting them into prison. I'd like to find out who the Islamists are in our intelligence agencies who are crippling our military and police. What is wrong with that idea? Why is it that our men can't go to war and kill the enemy without wondering if they're going to be arrested when they come back from the battlefield? Is that a way to fight a war? It's why we're not winning. Because Obama has crippled the military with his rules of engagement, just as he has intimidated the local police across America, making them vulnerable to being attacked and killed. I have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for U.S. Marines who were court-martialed for things they didn't do on the battlefield because they fired a little too quickly and killed the enemy before getting killed. I can cite one case after another of U.S. Marines who were imprisoned for being a little too good as warriors and not getting themselves killed or maimed first. We cannot let fear, the fear of uncovering those who are working in the halls of Congress, undermine both our international and our domestic security. I ask again, which innocent individuals were destroyed by HUAC. Search Google, and what pops up is an answer from, of all places, the Spartacus League. The Spartacus League is one of the most radical communist organizations in the United States of America. The Spartacus educational website has the most to say against HUAC. That should tell you an awful lot right there about the blacklist. When you read the site, you'll see why the Spartacus League fears the return of a HUAC-like organization. Its members would be exposed as subversives and find themselves first in line for the revitalized hearings. Let's put that aside for a minute. The Alien Registration Act was passed by Congress on June 29, 1940. It made it illegal for anyone in the United States to advocate, abet, or teach the desirability of overthrowing the government. The law also required all alien residents in the United States over 14 years of age to file a comprehensive statement of their personal and occupational status and a record of their political beliefs. According to the Spartacus League, the main objective of the Alien Registration Act was to undermine the Communist Party USA and other left-wing political groups in the United States. Now, as I said, the House Un-American Activities Committee was originally set up by Congress in 1938 to investigate people suspected of aiding and abetting the Nazis, as well as uncovering communist infiltration. But the radicals in the Spartacus League, in other words, the Bernie Sanders types, leave that first part out of their discussion. Then we go into the motion picture industry. HUAC named a number of individuals, Bertolt Brecht, names you wouldn't remember, Dalton Trumbo, Ring Lardner Jr. They refused to answer any questions, and they were known as the Hollywood Ten. They claimed that the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution gave them the right to do so, and they were right. That's why so many members of Obama's administration have copped to the First Amendment and, like gangsters, have taken the Fifth. Have you ever lived through a time when the people who ran the IRS were under investigation for crimes against innocent civilians and would take the Fifth Amendment instead of answering questions and not be put in jail? That's what happened under your hero of liberalism, Barack Obama. They took the Fifth Amendment. Do you know how many members of Obama's administration have gone before Congress? Not to investigate their, let us say, sympathies with organizations that would undermine America, but to investigate their actual activities against innocent Americans, and they hide behind the Fifth Amendment. Yet nothing has happened to them. They could have been found guilty of contempt of Congress, and they could have been sentenced to 6 to 12 months in prison, but the spineless, plastic conservatives in the Republican Party did not do this. Many of you will say, "Look, Mike, you don't believe in a blacklist, do you? You don't want one, right?" I'll answer that I wish it weren't necessary, but you're damn right I want one. I want one for people who hate our nation and want to see it destroyed. I want to know exactly who they are, and I want them stopped. My colleagues, if they bother to read this at all, will sit there and say that such a thing is wrong, unconstitutional, inhuman. Is it? Well, how come none of you would-be defenders of truth and justice have rushed to my defense since I've been blacklisted by Fox, CNN, and all the major channels? How come you don't care about that blacklist? How come you don't care, all of you plastic conservative pundits out there, that I'm the only member of the American media banned from entering Great Britain for statements I didn't even make? Where were you when I needed you? The answer is nowhere, because you're the very same plastic conservatives that you blast every day on television and in your writings. Chapter 9. our future. The coming economic collapse? The political class is obsessed with virtually every belch that goes on during a presidential campaign, and those within it can talk about a single belch for days, the exception being that the criticisms they have about Donald Trump, such as his hair, his spray tan, his fundraising, are all off-limits where Hillary is concerned, because then it would be anti-feminist. I have always said it's much ado about nothing. During the most recent presidential primaries, our choices came down to one from column A, between a commie and a criminal, those would be Sanders and Clinton of the Democrats, or one from column B, between a showman and what the Yiddish call a shanda, a shame. Those would be Trump and Ted Cruz of the Republicrats, much ado about nothing. During the mental abuse we endured during the endless primary season, and it was considerable, I took a break from politics for a day and watched a movie, The Big Short, which was about the collapse of our economy in 2007. The implosion was orchestrated by Wall Street, mainly the short sellers, and the movie was all about credit defaults for swaps, where they had aggregated mortgages into big funds and then bet against them. It's an amazing film, but very complicated. Now, I'm very good at statistics. I'm not good at high finance. I am very good at low finance. As a kid, I would work in a luncheonette, make $9 or something for cleaning dishes all night, and then go home, do my homework late, go to school, and put the money in the bank. I liked having a little bank account. That's how I was. I was raised to save money. I come from a lower middle class background, immigrant family. My folks were not that worldly. They didn't know high finance. It doesn't mean that they had a great virtue for not knowing. There's virtue in knowing how to manage wealth, and there are some very virtuous, wealthy people. There are people who just have a mind for this sort of thing, and they're not all crooks. I have a doctorate that included studying epidemiology statistics, and I could hardly follow the financial twists and turns in the movie. The person I saw the movie with is the CFO of a multi-billion dollar company, and even he had trouble following the plot. But it's important that you see this film, not just to see how it all played out, how it was all resolved. It turned out not to be a break from politics at all, since the events portrayed in that film helped elect Obama. You should pay very close attention because it's happening again. I'll get back to that in a moment. The movie is based on a book called The Big Short, Inside the Doomsday Machine, by Michael Lewis. The book traces the roots of the global market collapse through the eyes of those who saw it coming and figured out ways to profit from it. First out of the gate was Dr. Michael Burry, the hedge fund manager who invented the credit default swap.